You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. Thank you for listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, David Ramil. Please remember to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's RockAuto.com. The Miami Heat were back in action on Saturday afternoon for their first seeding game of the NBA restart, facing the Denver Nuggets, a strong contender in the Western Conference. I'll recap that game and give you the key takeaways before looking ahead to some big matchups versus some Eastern Conference contenders and talk about the latest on what's going on with Jimmy Butler. But on Saturday, everything was focused on trying to find a way to stop all-star Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets. The Heat held their own early on, despite making an unexpected change to their starting lineup. They replaced Myers Leonard with Jay Crowder, a point I had made last week when talking about defensive concerns with the team. I thought Crowder should start, but I thought he would start in place of Kendrick Nunn, who's been a little disappointing on the defensive end. But instead, he was in there for Myers, and Miami was getting beat at the rim and on the boards in the first half, and they were lucky to be down just one at the half. But then, in the second half, everything seemed to click for Miami on both ends. In the third quarter, Miami shot 67% from the floor. They outscored Denver by 16, and while they've shown that no lead can be safe during the regular season, that wasn't the case on Saturday when they maintained the lead and actually built on it, with Kelly Olynyk scoring all 20 of his points in the fourth on the way to a blowout win over the Nuggets, 125-105. Kelly scoring 20 points in the fourth, the only other Heat player to do that in franchise history, one Dwayne Wade. Not LeBron James, not Chris Bosh, not Glenn Rice. Kelly Olynyk and Dwayne Wade in the history books together, just as they deserve to be. The big story of the game, obviously Jay Crowder starting. Did not see that coming. I think the success of the starting lineup with Myers, Bam at the four, Duncan, Jimmy, and Kendrick Nunn was well established, and I thought that was going to be the case. I had talked about in the preview of the restart, I had addressed how the guard situation was a little problematic for Miami, that they keep struggling at the point of attack. Inserting Jay was a move that I had suggested in place, again, of Nunn, but to take take Leonard out was a very perplexing mood there. And not only that, but Myers didn't even play at all. He did not play at all. So this is not an issue about his health, but rather just, I don't know. I think Spoelstra clearly likes Myers Leonard from a personal perspective. I think that wasn't the case. I think he just thought he was a bad matchup out there with Nikola being as physical as he is and being able to get so many shots, running so much of the offense. They needed somebody with a little bit more flexibility, a little bit more switchability. And that was the case. That was the point that everybody brought up post-game. Everybody talked about Crowder's insertion as being a big boost because of the flexibility that it provides them on the defensive end. They can switch. They can contest the point of attack. They can move around instead of creating these opportunities. Again, what the point of attack issue is when you have ball handlers drive to the rim and then you have guys that either collapse on them to prevent them from getting an easy shot or kicking it out to the perimeter, you need somebody to be able to stop that flow. They were able to do that to some extent against the Denver Nuggets. Now, I'll point out something. The Nuggets did not have three of their main guards there. They didn't have Jamal Murray or Gary Harris or Will Barton, Will the Thrill Barton. And so that was a big chunk of their ball handling scoring duties. They were going with Monte Morris and Torrey Craig as their starting backcourt. Not ideal for them. And so that certainly did help Miami. But regardless, I saw a lot of Nuggets fans and media mentioning that that wasn't the excuse. They still think that they're deep enough and good enough to contest with Miami. And that was not the case, at least not in the second half where Miami clearly dominated. The little story of the game, Jimmy Butler. Incredible to see him in action again. He looked phenomenal, and he just had a fantastic game. 30 minutes, 6 of 11 from the floor, not a three-pointer taken. He looked really engaged. He was able to get to the rim, had a great shot at the buzzer to send it into the half. It just looked really, really solid overall. And most importantly, another point I had brought up, getting to the free throw line, getting the calls that he deserves as a superstar, 10 of 11 from the free throw line, and that was huge. He also finished with 4 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals. Excellent defense. Just looked like a man possessed there, anticipating passing lanes as well as any player in Heat history. And I'm looking at Dwayne specifically when I mentioned that. Jimmy looked fantastic. Finished with 22 points overall. Not a huge, gaudy night, but that's just not who Jimmy is. Jimmy's not going to put up 40-point games. He's going to be effective. He's going to create plays for others. He's going to find the player that's open along the perimeter and make the right play, and that's part of what his strength is. And it was on display against the Nuggets when he was doing so much. He took turns just with everybody else, trying to stop Jokic, trying to contain Paul Millsap, trying to do everything on the defensive end. And I think having Crowder and Bam out there allowed them to have more of a bulky presence in the paint, but also allowed them some flexibility to kind of go, and Jimmy in particular, allow him to kind of go as a roamer along the perimeter and see who might be open and contest those three-point shots. They only shot 22.9%. That's from the Nuggets' perspective. They shot 8 of 35 from the field. Again, a lot of that due to the fact that they're missing Harris, Barton, and Murray, their best three-point shooters aside from Jokic. But they were very contested shots, most of all. They did not look like they had any kind of flow to their offense. I was a little surprised to see Jokic play as much as he did. He played 19 minutes in the first half, maybe even 20 minutes, and then just 14 minutes in the second half to avoid any kind of injury when it was clear that it was going to be a blowout after Miami had built that huge lead in the third quarter. But additional takeaways from the game, Bam Adebayo. If there was any rust on him, it was clearly not evident against the Nuggets. Again, he only played that one scrimmage against the Memphis Grizzlies where he looked a little shaky, did not seem particularly active. Well, not in the kind of way that we have seen Bam in the past. Against the Nuggets, he was as fluid as ever. It looked solid. Did have four turnovers, but he also had six assists, nine rebounds, guarded multiple players, 7 of 12 from the field, had a nice floater, nice range on his shot. Was able to get to the rim, just looked really, really solid. I mean, 22-point outing for him is phenomenal, and I think it just shows that he has another level that we've all suspected he can reach, and if he continues to do this somewhat consistently, I think it'll be huge for him. And Millsap and Jokic are solid defenders. Millsap in particular is a very good defender, even at this point in his career. So for Adebayo to get those points in the rim, a lot of that had to do with this next player who I think was phenomenal. Duncan Robinson finished plus 28 for the game. 5 of 9 for 17 points, including 4 of 4 on three throws. Now, he did go just 3 of 7 from three-point range, so it wasn't like he was relying on the three-point shot exclusively, and that's what made him so dangerous. Something, again, that I talked about before is Duncan being such an X factor because of that gravity, because of how he can shift defenses that have to focus on him, and Duncan being a... He's not a great ball handler, but he's got a little bit more handle than you give him credit for being a guard type player. He's also a solid passer, and that was pretty evident. He ran a really nice looking pick and roll with Bam that allowed for a good look at the rim for Adebayo, and I think that's the kind of play that Robinson can really focus on. Everybody spoke about that after the game where they were just talking about, and Jimmy in particular brought this up, that Duncan has more versatility to his game than what we give him credit for. He's not just a three-point shooter, and that was really evident against Denver. Just seemed to collapse everything in his way and was able to make the right play every time. Finished with a plus-minus of plus 28, highest of any two of the two teams. It just looked incredible out there. Again, for him to have an impact without shooting, 5 of 9 or something like that is pretty phenomenal, because that's heretofore what we've seen Duncan be able to do most effectively, is to control the game or at least have a significant impact from the three-point line. And while he did shoot well, that wasn't the main focus of what he was doing. He was just trying to make the right play, and it worked out really well. He did shoot well, too, in addition to that. But well, also, Miami finished really, really well at the free-throw line. They got a lot of those free throws from Jimmy Butler, but Bam also finished 8 of 10 from the field. From the line, 32 of 37 overall from the field, nearly 87%. That is incredible. Just fantastic game. I can't say enough about it. For Miami to start off as well as they did, this was the best outcome possible. They took advantage of an undermanned opponent. They just looked sharp. They looked great. They made the changes that I thought Eric Spoelstra would never make. Something I'll talk about that in the next segment, but just a really, really good game overall. A couple more things that I'll get into about the game in the third segment. Next, I'll be talking about Jimmy Butler, who missed practice on Sunday, and I'll give you the latest on that, plus a look ahead to a key matchup with the Toronto Raptors. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent like me, or if you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair like me, everyone needs support to make it through the day. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. They have this special product called the CBD Freeze. It's complete with menthol. It's an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or in a shareable squeeze tube. So you just rub it on, apply it to the area that you might need, and you get instant relief. They also have CBD Recover, which combines CBD with anti-inflammatory compounds like arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need where it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else that CBD has to offer, they're offering all of our listeners 25% off. That's a quarter of the price your next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com and use the promo code NBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD. Just a reminder, listen to, subscribe, and leave a review whenever possible on your favorite podcast app to listen to podcasts, and that you always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked on Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. So Miami held a press conference on Sunday morning after a short practice, I imagine, and the news came out that Jimmy Butler was not available to the team. He did not practice, and so, of course, that immediately began some speculation from media members and the eventual Twitter, Heat Twitter, that found out about the news regarding Jimmy. Eric Spoelstra's comments were pretty benign. He said that it was an excused absence, didn't talk about it in any detail. That's Spo, that's who he is. He's not going to give you anything regarding the lineup. He expected everybody to be available tomorrow. At least that's what I inferred from his comments. But then Jay Crowder spoke to the media following Spoelstra, and he mentioned in response to a question from friend of the program, Sun Sentinel reporter Ira Winderman, who asked about what it's like having Jimmy in and out of the lineup or other players out of the lineup. And again, Crowder put on the spot, said something about it being very strange, that you never know what's going to happen, but that he expected everybody to step up, and that when Jimmy gets out of, this were his words, when Jimmy gets out of quarantine, we'll figure it out as we go along. That was a mistake, because that started the rumor mill pretty extensively there. From that point forward, nobody knew what was going on. And again, a lot of speculation from some reporters. I've made it a point, and I'm not here to put myself on a pedestal or anything like that. I've made it a point never to be that kind of a rumor monger. I know a lot of my listeners and fans in general of the NBA and of course of this team want to find out the latest rumors about this team. I know it's also my job as the podcast host to get into any kind of rumors, but I also don't have information. The team didn't reveal anything. Sources on the team didn't reveal anything. Nobody was going to make any kind of clarifying statement regarding Jimmy Butler and whether or not he'd be available. And so from that point, to speculate on it, to offer an opinion, to kind of just drum up the rumor mill a little bit is not who I am. And I apologize for that if that's what you're looking for. I don't feel comfortable doing it because, one, we start to see possibilities that Jimmy might be going through some personal issues, that he had some personal issues to start the season regarding his family or the birth of his daughter, and that maybe those might be cropping up. I had some reporters actually speculate that he was a little overly excited against the Nuggets on Saturday, and that maybe that was indicative of something not right with his head. You also had Sixers fans chiming in saying this was the league's biggest drama queen. Real words, real tweets sent out about Jimmy Butler, even after, well, they've been dealing with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and a whole other cast of characters on that franchise, and somehow Jimmy Butler has proven to be the biggest drama queen according to Sixers fans, something that I will never tolerate and I think is absolutely patently ridiculous because he's been nothing but phenomenal here in Miami. Either way, we didn't know exactly what was going on. By 5:30, when the team released their injury report regarding the Toronto Raptors matchup taking place on Monday at 1:30, Jimmy was not listed on it. So the expectation is, again, that he'll be available, and we don't know what's going on. We don't know why he was excused. And then Mark Stein of the New York Times actually reported that the NBA is cracking down on players who don't wear masks and face coverings within the bubble. So it's the connection between Jimmy Butler and the edict from Stein kind of made things a little bit more interesting, and people started suspecting that maybe Butler had tested positive or that he wasn't wearing a mask and he was under quarantine again, filling in what Jay's comments had been. And so there was a lot of rumoring going on about what was happening with Butler, none of which was accurate. And from what we know right now, it seems like Butler is going to be available to play. He's not been made, you know, he's not listed as out. He's not listed as doubtful. I suspect that he'll be available. And if that's the case, based on what we know so far, that's nothing but good for Miami, obviously. And I just don't feel, I didn't feel comfortable reporting on anything because there was nothing real to report other than a comment was made. It was kind of blown out of proportion. And I think Crowder's comments were taken out of context. And it was a NBA athlete who is not necessarily the most polished speaker. And that's not a knock on Jay. He's actually a very good interview. He's just, at some point, you're going to make a mistake. Hell, I make mistakes, and I do this for a living. I talk for a living and have been talking for a living for a long time, and I still make mistakes all the time, as you well know, unfortunately. But the reality is that to expect Crowder, similarly to what Goran Dragic said a couple weeks ago before the NBA bubble began, where he basically outed Bam Adebayo and Kendrick Nunn as the two players who had tested positive for the coronavirus, nothing that has actually been confirmed at any point by the team. The players have all been quarantined. Everything's gone through. Whether Jimmy is actually in or out of quarantine doesn't really seem like that's the case. It seems like he is most likely going to be available for whatever reason, an excused absence from the team. And so he'll be hopefully in the lineup against the Raptors, because that is something that really helps Miami, who, well, let me say, they have their hands full because the Raptors look very, very good. I wasn't bullish on the Raptors to start the season. I think a lot of you know that. My feelings on the team were that they were going to be kind of taking their foot off the gas pretty considerably after having won the championship. A lot of that had to do with the pathology of the Raptors players that, you know, they had been driven for so many years to just get past that hump, a hump that looked a lot like LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. They could never quite get past the Cavs. They had a great team with DeMar DeRozan, and it just was never enough for them to get past LeBron and the Cavs. And then they kind of just, they developed some insecurity about how people see them. A lot of that is an anti-Canadian bias that's perceived by Raptors fans. And so they were always a little engine that couldn't. And they just played that idea or narrative pretty effectively. And then last year, they get Kawhi Leonard. You're never sure what's going to happen with Kawhi and that injury, because that's what forced him out of San Antonio in the first place. And then he gets to Toronto, and they look great. They dominate. They have a fantastic playoff run. And, of course, they win the championship. And then Kawhi leaves for the Clippers. So from that point forward, it seems like everybody on that Raptors team, at least to me, was going to be satisfied with what they accomplished last year. Nick Nurse has done a fantastic job. Kyle Lowry has done a fantastic job of getting everybody in that team to focus on what's next, and that's winning a championship this year. I'm a believer in what the Raptors can do. I did not expect myself to be in that place at the start of the bubble, but here we are after they've decimated the Lakers, and they just look really, really sharp. They look engaged. They have a good, deep team. And that's a problem. And I think they're going to be an obstacle in Miami's path. I really do. Right now, I might actually give them the edge over the Bucks as far as making it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, whether or not they'll face Miami when they get there is a whole other story. But I think the Raptors look really, really sharp. And part of it is that they have these two great guards, Kyle Lowry and Fran VanVleet, that will make things difficult for Miami. And that's my first takeaway, or my first key against the Raptors in Monday afternoon's matchup, stopping their guards. I'm not sure what happens next, and I think a lot of that has to do with the starting lineup regarding whether or not Myers will play, whether or not Bam will start at the center, and then what happens with Crowder, especially if Jimmy is or may not be in the lineup. Let's assume that he's in the lineup. I still think he's going to be there guarding either VanVleet or Lowry for most of the time. They're not quick guards. They're not running heavy pick and roll. Of course, they run it to some degree, but they're creating plays for others. Lowry in particular uses his bigger body to kind of get to the rim, create contact, sell it. VanVleet is most effective from the outside. He's a little quicker, but again, not a lot of pick and roll with their bigs. And so they're not necessarily the problem as far as being able to get to the rim. I think Miami's defenders, the combination of their wing defenders, even Nunn to some degree, along with Crowder and Butler, if he's available, will be able to contain the guards. I think that's a huge matchup there that I'm curious to see what happens. I don't have any real insight as to what might happen because, again, a lot of that depends on whether or not Butler is even available to play. But that's a huge thing to look at, is whether or not Lowry is able to get to the rim at will because they're not able to control the point of attack, and whether or not Van Vliet gets open looks from the perimeter as a result, where he's most effective. My second key to the game is the OG Anunoby versus Duncan Robinson matchup. That's huge. OG, coming into his own offensively, is able to provide a little bit more of a spark as a shooter from the perimeter, and has always been a very, very solid defender. He uses his length well. He's quick. He's mobile. He's strong. He's got long hands and arms. He impacts defenses that way, and he's going to stay with Duncan most of the time. I see that being a key issue for Miami, is Duncan having to come off multiple screens there, and whether or not OG Anunoby is going to give him the room to do so as far as getting his shot off. And even what I talked about in the first segment, if Duncan doesn't have that shot and he's using screens or using dribble handoffs to create opportunities for others, how is he going to get that pass in over Anunoby's 6'11", 7 feet long width, length? That's going to be a tough challenge for Robinson. And so that's something I would definitely look at, is whether or not Robinson is able to get easy looks and passes over and beyond Anunoby once he's contained along the perimeter. Third key for Miami is whether or not Bam or Myers starts against Marc Gasol, because Gasol, not the burly presence he once was with the Memphis Grizzlies, and with the league changing as much as it has, he's mostly perimeter-based, but he's very good from that perimeter, and he's also going to be able to get to the line on occasion. He's also going to, you know, try to get to the rim whenever he has a clear space there. He's also a very good passer, and so how much space you give him is interesting. And with that being said, you don't need to play up on Gasol as much as you normally would, and so maybe you can afford to have a guy like Myers out there and save Crowder on the bench. Maybe make a change that way, especially if, again, Jimmy plays, then maybe you can afford to start Myers again. It's going to be interesting to see what Spoelstra does. I don't know if he's going to continue to bench Myers for all 8 seeding games. Again, I don't think there's anything wrong with Myers from a health perspective. He and everybody on the franchise, from the coaching staff onward, has said that he's 100% ready to play. So my expectation was that he would play. It's just that wasn't the case against the Nuggets, and I wonder whether or not it'll be the case moving forward, especially when you're on the first game of a 2-day back-to-back set with the Boston Celtics the following day. What happens then? You're going to need Adebayo's speed against Daniel Tice of Boston and the Celtics on Tuesday, and so maybe you can afford to start Myers and Gasol, who's a little bit slower at this point in his career, and that should be an interesting decision for Spoelstra. Again, one that hinges on whether or not Butler is in fact available and ready to play. But I'll finish my recap of the win over the Nuggets while looking at the week ahead in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Who doesn't want to save money? And if you want to save money on your car when you need to make some changes or repairs, the place to go is rockauto.com. They're a family-owned business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. You go to rockauto.com, you use their easy website there, you find the parts you're looking for, you find the right price that you're willing to pay, and you get the parts delivered to yourself within days. You can make the changes yourself if you're a do-it-yourselfer. I use it that way. I was able to save hundreds of dollars to repair my wife's taillight on her Honda CR-V. It worked out so well for us, and I just recommend it so highly to everybody. I know it's something that maybe a lot of people don't, you know, want to focus on. It's like, you know, you want to take your car into a shop, have them take a look at it, have them fix it. You don't want to be done with it. You think of too much of a hassle to get the parts. What do you do with them? None of that is true when it comes to rockauto.com. They're so easy to use. They have customer service available to you if you have any questions or concerns about what parts to get for your car. They'll be able to answer them. They always have a very easy to use interface there to get somebody available for, to, you know, to answer your questions. And then again, you get that part delivered, you save money, and you do it yourself. And best of all, they have reliably low prices that are the same for professionals or do-it-yourselfers. So why spend twice as much for the same parts? You go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck. And when you get to the how did you hear about us section, write Locked On so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's rockauto.com. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. I kind of wanted to do something a little different as I recap or finish my recap of the win over the Nuggets and talk about the good, the bad, the ugly. Three being a big number, not just for Miami from their three-point shooting, but of course Dwayne Wade's jersey number and the good, bad, the ugly, one of my favorite movies to watch. So the good, Jay Start. I think it shows so much from Eric Spoelstra that I wasn't expecting his flexibility, his willingness to make a change like that to a guy who I think he identifies with, admires Leonard and really appreciates. Just from a cultural standpoint, Meyer's a guy who has done so much, works hard, has spoken so highly of the Heat franchise and the culture and everything else. And for him to bench Meyer's like that, and not just bench him, but to not play him altogether, not sure what that point was. Like, again, I think a lot of people will start to look into it and say, well, maybe he was trying to teach him a lesson, or maybe he was trying to save him for the playoffs. I don't think that's the case. I think he was just reading a personal matchup there and recognize that maybe it was time to make a personnel change. And that was something pretty huge for Spoelstra, who has been criticized by me and others over the past few years for being a little too rigid with his rotations. And for him to make that change, you have to give him kudos for that, because that is not something I expected to see. He did a phenomenal job of just reading the situation, made the right decision, and went with Crowder. Crowder, again, not perfect, but he shot well. He had a big impact offensively. He also had a nice did a nice job defensively, where he was able to contain guys like Craig or Monte Morris at the point of attack. He was also able to switch on to bigger forwards like Paul Millsap or Michael Porter Jr. when he was a starter also for the Nuggets. You know, Porter Jr., a good scorer who I think a lot of Nuggets fans were expecting him to have a huge game against Miami. That wasn't the case when he shot just 2 of 8 from the perimeter and 4 of 11 overall for 11 points. And so that was a pretty interesting matchup, I think, and Crowder handled it very well. So I'm curious to see how that plays out against the Raptors. Again, you know, with their starting lineup of Gasol, Spicy P, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, who, you know, are intermittent as far as the 3 or 4. They both play either forward position. They can both switch on defense, and they both score from the perimeter. Siakam is obviously a little bit better of a ball handler and can get to the rim more effectively than Anunoby, but Crowder being out there, I think he's going to be a huge boost for Miami. But the bad is, what do you do with upcoming games? I think that's a huge concern of mine, is looking at a decision that Spoelstra makes against the Nuggets. Does it set a precedent? Is it a one-time-only affair? And you look at the Raptors on Monday and then the Celtics on Tuesday, and you're going to have some risk of injury. And I think that's a huge concern in this bubble scenario. Not just at any point in time. It should always be a concern that you don't ever want to put your players at the risk of any kind of injury. But unfortunately, I'm recording this after I saw Jonathan Isaac go down with a gruesome leg injury. Hasn't been reported yet exactly what it is, but maybe he was a player who wasn't quite ready to be out there. You know, he's young. He had a leg injury for most of the season, and unfortunately, it looks like he's going to be out for the rest of the year. I kind of imagine that he's going to play based on what I saw from the highlights there, from the film of his injury. And so you don't want to risk any kind of injury. And so you want to be able to do what you can to minimize that risk by playing Bam some spots, by playing Myers at others. You get Kelly Olynyk some burn there. I think your inactives are going to continue to be the young guys, Gabe Vincent, Chris Silva, Kyle Alexander. And if that's the case, then, you know, I don't see how Spoelstra in particular can avoid playing Myers. And I think that's, you know, it's a question to be on the lookout for, because Spoelstra, again, has been a little strict with his rotations at times. Does he continue to have that sort of flexibility? He made a huge decision, a great one, that worked out really well against the Nuggets, and how he continues to move forward, I think, will show a lot of maturity from Eric Spoelstra that maybe he hasn't been willing to show. Maybe he's been a little bit tight, and this is a new, looser version of Spoelstra when it comes to, you know, doling out minutes and making the right decisions that a lot of, you know, people, pundits on the outside say, well, why didn't he make that play? Why didn't he make that change in the rotation? He's done it so far against Denver. Let's see how he does moving forward. The ugly, unfortunately, Derrick Jones Jr., a player that I thought would be kind of out of the rotation a little bit, and that was the case against the Nuggets. Didn't, you know, he did play 12 minutes, most of which came during the fourth quarter, but he just continues to be a non-factor, and that's a problem there, especially if he can't play offensively. If he can't make a contribution offensively, then I don't see what you can do you know, to have him out there. He finished with just 1 point in 12 minutes. He's as good as he is as a defender and has that kind of length to stop players. I don't think he was most effective against the Nuggets. And Spoelstra made the decision not to play Jones for very long. And because of their overall size in that lineup, the Nuggets lineup, that is, they were able to limit where Jones is most effective as either a lob threat or as a perimeter guy. He was able to get to the rim very easily, didn't have a lot of open looks there. And so Spoelstra made a quick read and said, you know what, Derek, I can't afford to give you any time, until it was, again, well established that Miami would go on to an easy win late in the fourth quarter. And that's when he got most of those minutes. And so that's interesting. I don't know what to do with Jones moving forward. If I had to guess, based on what we saw against Miami's win over the Raptors earlier in the season when they had a three-headed monster with Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, and Justice Winslow, I think Jones plays against Toronto. So I don't think it's going to be the norm to sit Jones Jr. I think it's going to be based on specific matchups. Again, I have questions about what he does with the center position, and I also have questions about what he'll do with the wings. And if that's the case, maybe Jones doesn't play. My guess is that he is. My guess is also that he starts Myers on Monday against the Raptors. But we'll see what happens. It should be a really good game. A lot's at stake here. I have predicted that this would be the loss for Miami as far as their overall seeding games is concerned. The first of their losses there. I don't want anybody to get too high or too low based on either a big win over Denver or an upcoming potential loss to the Raptors. I'll be pleasantly surprised if they beat Toronto. I do have concerns about Toronto's overall strength, their chemistry, a sense of urgency that maybe Miami shares as well, but there are questions about Miami's defense that I don't think apply to Toronto's as much. And so it's going to be a really big game. I think Miami can do a lot to kind of establish some momentum there. But I think knowing that Boston is coming up on Tuesday and a win over them will, I think, impact the seeding a little bit more as far as the conference standings are concerned. I think they'd be more focused on looking ahead to try to beat Boston than they would to beat Toronto. And maybe they might pack it up a little early. Not typical for Miami, but we'll see how it plays out. Again, should be a really good game. 1:30 broadcast. You'll be able to see it on Fox Sports or on ESPN. I think actually maybe it might be on NBA TV now that I think about it. But either way, it's a huge game. I'm looking forward to it. And I'll be recapping it, of course, as I will for all the other games that are coming up this week, as well as any other news and notes from around the team, other than rumors, and from around the NBA. So make sure to subscribe and follow this podcast right now on your favorite podcast app so you get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.